to Bagel Tech Beat, the weekend show from the Bagel Tech Network with me, Ewan Rankin. And of course, I am joined by the Fantastic Four to my left. Starting top left corner, we've got Mr. Troy King. Bonsoir, mate. How are you?
I'm angry, Ewan.
Said with a very good, deep voice. Well done, mate. I'm very proud of you this week.
Thank you. I've grown up.
Good lad. And you are angry about what exactly?
Well, more broken promises from Steve Ballmer. Windows Phone 7 update delayed yet again. They just can't get their act together over there.
Have we got to the point that Windows Phone 7 is vaporware?
Pretty much. It's all promises and broken dreams.
I think it's humidity wear. You can feel it, but it's not. It hasn't condensated.
Coalesced into something that's a droplet. Windows droplet. There we go. That's the software for the future. It's not a drip, it's a drop. Next to Troy, we've got Sarah. Hello, girl. How are you doing?
I'm fine, thank you.
You've got a cursor right in the middle of your head.
Yes, I noticed that. I thought it was something personal, but I can't do anything about it.
I do apologise. There we go.
That's better.
Cursor gone. Yep. Good week?
Yes. Yeah, I've been learning lots and lots about C# actually this week. So it's been quite a productive week.
Very good. Same as D-flat, apparently.
No, obviously playing with it on the Microsoft platform, but hearing things that it may well profligate out into the open source platform, which is obviously more my natural preference. So looking forward to that if it's going to happen in the future.
So just what is C#? God, I'm not a geek. Come on, tell me.
It's a variation of C. Well, it's more C++ really, because it's object orientated, but it's designed to be a lot easier and a lot more powerful for implementing stuff for the .NET framework in Microsoft.
Now, did you?
But it's
But
it's designed to be more generic, so that and there's talk about other vendors taking it so that it can be rolled out, so that it's more generic rather than just on the .NET framework.
Now, you said you had a good start to the week, but a tough finish. Was that when you got halfway through the course and went, "Jesus, this is hard"?
It wasn't so much that; it was just hitting brick walls with certain things I was trying to do.
Right.
Having had a really good start of the week with getting my first proper C# program working, and then starting to push the boundaries a bit more and struggling a bit. So I'm sure next week will be fine, and I'll be back on it again and. Going to the next level, which is really good. And the thing is, I lose track of how many languages I've learned, but every time I learn a new language, I get, quite excited by it, because it's a different way of doing things, and you find the good things and the bad things about a new language.
Is there a metaphor for ordering a beer in a different language as far as the computer world's concerned? Because that's what you need. You need to be able to order a beer in every language.
Yeah, I suppose.
Is that hello world? In everything.
I can't think of it off the top of my head. Well, it might be off the top of my head, but I'm sure there is.
Below Sarah, we have Kyle. Mate, how's it going? A Pacific Rim update, please.
Pacific Rim update. Well, we're fine here in the Philippines. Apparently another 6.6. They're calling it an earthquake. I don't know if it's aftershock or earthquake in Japan right now. So
it's pretty significant.
Again, though, 6.6. What's that?
Pretty significant, though, 6.6.
Yeah. Pretty significant all. It's been a very bad day for Japan. So as I've said in every show, I'm sure as everybody says, all of our thoughts and prayers are with, of course, everyone in Japan right now.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, you've emerged pretty unscathed.
Yeah, we had about a 70-centimeter wave come through here. Not that bad on the eastern side of the Philippines. But we weren't affected at all here in the metro.
And last but by no means least, Mr. Eric Lanigan. How you doing, mate?
Hey, guys, on that positive and upbeat note, happy to be here.
Warm and dry in San Francisco, a slight lapping and nothing more.
High and dry, no tsunamis yet, keeping our fingers crossed.
Yeah, it would have been there by now, mate.
Did
Hawaii get hit? Because they were talking about that, but...
I think a little bit. I was reading they evacuated up into the tops of more reinforced buildings, but beyond that, I haven't kept up with that news.
Right. There was a suggestion, Kyle, that you were going to lose internet, but you've been with us all day, so it's not been too bad by the looks.
Yeah, no. I think it's all right. We're doing fine here. Wouldn't notice a difference anyways. We're only on 3 megabit, so.
Exactly.
I've seen some reports apparently that they're talking about some possible evacuations in the far north of California into Oregon.
It's flat in Oregon, isn't it?
I haven't heard about that.
I heard something about that they Oregon was may get the worst of it, but I figured that would have come and gone already.
And after all, it's Oregon.
And exactly.
Yeah.
It'll affect maybe 3 sheep. That's about it.
Flat and boring, and then there's the country. Right, the week in technology, before we really upset somebody. An awful lot's happened this week. There's been an HP truck carrying inks that's turned over underneath a bridge and painted the town red. There's been a whole load of other stuff gone. 4.3 came and went, and you downloaded it and you had a go with it. GarageBand came along as well for iPad. Anyone played with GarageBand for iPad yet?
No. Not yet, but I want to.
You might have been, Ewan.
Oh, well, guess what I've been doing all afternoon?
Rim shots.
So I take it that works with iPad 1 then too.
It works just fine. Yeah, because they rub in the fact that the UK hasn't got iPad 2 yet. Thank you, Eric.
Well, I don't have one, but you know.
Yeah, but you could have got one at 5 o'clock, but you didn't.
Yeah, rub it in because I, in theory, could have had one, certainly.
25 minutes, I guess.
Do you think that there would be a performance difference on an iPad 2?
Well, there's bound to be, isn't there? But, I mean, GarageBand, I don't think so, no. Because GarageBand runs slick as snot on my iPad 1. It really is.
Now, I've got to ask you, the thing where how they say, all this hype about the accelerometer is used to measure the, what are they called? The velocity of, like, hitting keys.
That's
hitting
right,
keyboard keys and stuff like that. Is that with it sitting on a flat table?
Now, we had a chat about this during the Mac show, actually. And, yes, it is. I'm trying to find me. I've got a cable here linked up to.
Because I was wondering if maybe you had to like put it in your lap or something that wasn't stable and flat in order for it to feel that difference. But that's really impressive because, I mean, that's what is that measuring? Like micrometers of a difference.
It's measuring nothing more than effectively vibration. And unfortunately, I think the problem is I've started the recording, so you're not going to be able to hear this on the live finish. But I'll start GarageBand up and you can have a play. You'll be able to hear it certainly now in the live feed to the chat room. But...
Like the vibration against the table, I guess. Interesting.
Well, I was demonstrating it in the Mac show, and it was sat on the desk, so it's as low as it goes in terms of vibration, but it's very much a bass drum.
Oh, that sounds fantastic! Tap tap tap. That's very authentic.
Yeah, I can join in with that as well.
Are you taking the mickey?
No, would I?
Piano?
That sounds like an iPad GarageBand to me.
That sounds like an iPad with no GarageBand installed.
Can you hear it at all?
No.
No.
Oh, well, you could have said.
I figured you figured that out by now.
I thought there was something we were missing, Ewan.
Well, you were the sound. I mean,
no, I mean as in that you were doing something and it was really good or something.
Listen to the realism. It's Ewan tapping on the desk frantically. You're a bunch of gits. Hang on a second.
Feel the power of that bass, man. Yeah. Oh.
Ewan's over there. He's rocking out. We're just like, what's going on?
Yeah.
Hang on. Have you heard that?
No.
You can't hear anything.
No.
Chat room, can you hear anything? Sounds good here, says the chat room.
We can, yes. No, I've got to turn this up. Start tapping, Ewan. Yeah, they can, I guess. Hear something.
Yes, no?
Apparently, I'm hearing it through Ustream, so it's all you, chat room.
You're hearing it through chat room. I mean, the whole point of the thing, I mean, it is just utterly phenomenal in terms of a musical instrument. And even if you go to individual notes...
Which we can't just
Which you can hear if you've got the chat room open. But there we go. I mean, it is absolutely phenomenal as a music playing device. You can play individual notes, and you can pick it up. And the using the strings is just, you actually play vibrato or you bend, and it just goes right there with you. And the aftershock of the notes is unbelievable. It's an incredible sensitivity with even when it's just fixed to the desk, it knows how hard you're hitting it.
And is there a one-to-one correspondence with the Mac version? Like, can you export a project and it's exactly the same instruments and all the same data and metadata is retained?
I'd like to say I'd been a journalistic endeavor and I'd got that far, but actually I was just too busy playing.
Do you know at least what the size requirements are? How many megabytes that takes up on your iPad?
It takes up 192, I think it was when I downloaded it. It was incredible. It's really, really small. It's got a whole load of sequences with it. You know, the jam sequences that you get in GarageBand. The stuff that's really phenomenal is if you can't play a musical instrument, you can still make a tune. And you know, it's all well and good to be able to play a sequence of notes as a chord, just like that, or you can play the individual notes one at a time. But if you've got like you want a pick section of, you know, a chord picking behind, it'll go with the tempo, and it'll just sit and play a picking sequence behind, and you just change the chords by tapping on them.
I'm going to tell you right now, you're one hell of a salesman. I can't even hear what's going on, but I want it.
You can hear it because I just heard someone's echo there.
That was me turning the Ustream up so that we could hear it.
I mean, the thing that really got me with this is it's £2.99. I mean, it's $4? $4.99 in the States? Something like that? I mean,
I think it's $4.99.
Yeah, it's the buy of the century. There's no way on God's green earth that you would not buy this application.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, they clearly want that to be a killer app that sells iPads for them. I'm really impressed. I mean, it sounds silly because obviously the most impressive part of this is how the software works. But for it to be, like you said, under 200 megabytes... I mean, a lot of games that I download are like 500, so they must be using some really efficient compression for all those different musical sounds.
I can't tell you that I've told you the exact right figure there, but it isn't much. I looked at it and went, wow, it's not much at all.
That is an impressive size. You're right, Eric.
The next thing, as you say, is to try and figure out whether it works with GarageBand on the Mac. That's the, you know, whether I can export my file. Or whether I have to
because I know that on the Mac, GarageBand uses those .cab files, which are essentially Apple lossless. So I'm curious if maybe they're using more highly compressed versions of the same sounds and instrument sounds for the iPad version, and then when you take the project to the Mac, it knows to access the analogous ones that are lossless.
Well, the interesting thing here, and there's a good point being made by Max Seed here in the chat room, saying, you know, this is what separates the iPad from the other tablets. It's an absolute bargain. But I mean, I know you talked about this yesterday, Eric, about the appification of the computing experience, whether we're not buying applications in the true sense, we're buying walled garden apps. You know, what's that doing to the overall internet experience? What's it doing to the consumer experience and consumer performance? And there's a certain element of looking at what you've got with the iPad here in that the corporate element of Apple has got an enormously powerful tool to leverage the rest of the tablet market. And as Maxine says there, you know, it's setting it apart from the other applications and from the other iPads and tablets that are out there. What's going to happen next?
It's exciting. Now, do you wonder if perhaps they used some special knowledge of the hardware in maybe a Microsoft antitrust fashion to create such an amazing piece of software? Or do you think that every other developer has a chance equally? Maybe they're saying, hey, you guys, you could all create GarageBand for iPad if you just tried hard enough.
Well, Songsmith, man.
Songsmith.
Sorry.
Yeah, you could have created Songsmith. You could have done that on DOS 4. But no, the if you look at when you download it from the App Store, it says you only need 4.2 in terms of iOS. It doesn't ask you for 4.3. So Apple have brought this out when they thought it was right, when they thought it was ready. They haven't brought it out to go along with the iOS 4.3. Or
now,
the bigger processor.
Why do you suppose it's Apple who has to make such amazing apps? Why can it not be a third-party developer? Why can it not be Google? Or why can it not be one of the many manufacturers who would really like a killer app for their non-Apple tablet? And I don't mean in terms of some kind of technological advantage. I mean philosophically. Are they just not attempting to do it?
Because they suck at it.
Or maybe...
Is that there some kind of Apple magic that it just companies simply can't replicate?
Well, that might be Troy. That might be true as far as the iPad goes, but for Android platforms, why not?
Here's the thing. I mean, let's look at GarageBand in itself. As exactly as Eric says, there is nothing to have stopped you running this on 4.2. It doesn't say 4.2.1. It doesn't say 4.2.2. It says 4.1. 4.2. That's it. You don't need the variants of 4.2. You just need 4.2 to run GarageBand. Now, GarageBand 4.2, iOS 4.2 has been around for 8 months? 6 months? Let's say 6 months.
I'm not sure where you're going with this. I don't think I said anything about the version number.
No. What I'm saying is, iTunes says you need 4.2 to run GarageBand. So what we're saying is the day that 4.2 came out, you could have run GarageBand. But Apple haven't released it until now. Now, that's a six-month window. In that six-month window, any developer worth their salt could have sat down and could have written something that would have done sequencing and recording and guitar amplification and all of the things that the GarageBand currently does. Because don't forget, you can plug your guitar into it and it runs, and it's got a guitar amp application within it. You can plug a microphone in and it's got an audio capture application within it as well. And there's a ton of stuff you can do with it right out the box that could have been done 6 months ago, but no one's done a flaming thing.
So what do you think? Do you think Apple is just metaphysically more in tune to what people want, and they just have this supernatural ability to make the best stuff? Or do you think that maybe any other company who wasn't selling the hardware couldn't afford to give such a thing away for $5? Maybe the true cost of a third party had developed it would be $100.
Carl, you were about to say something. Go on.
No, I was just going to say, you were saying about plugging in an iPad. Let's not forget we had to spend $29.95 to get that little adapter so we can do that kind of thing.
No, you don't. No. Hang on a second. If you've got the cable that plugs it into the audio mic socket at the top, that's it. You just plug the other quarter-inch jack into your guitar, you're away and running. You don't need an adapter.
Oh, really? So you don't need like the iRig thing or anything
thing? No. You just need a three-pole adapter or the pole adapter that's got the one that goes into the mic in thing, you know, like you use for your earpiece for your phone set. If you've got the cable that goes into there and goes and fulfills the microphone socket, that's it. You get mono input from your guitar straight away.
Well, thank you very much. Learn something every day.
Go on, Eric.
Sorry.
Oh, sorry. Now I get worried about this. I get genuinely worried when everyone comes to the consensus that the Apple products are that much better. Because, you know, so many people, every time I say this, every time I'm sure you say this, Ewan, or anyone else here says this, you know, you always get all kinds of mail saying, oh, you Apple fanboy, everything, you love Apple. And the comeback is always, well, they are... it's not just us saying it. Every other company in the world is like copying them, photo Xerox like. But what bothers me is why? Why can no one compete in so many of these ways that Apple seems to just be a rock star?
Well, there's a couple of comments here straight away in the chat room. There's other music apps out there. They just don't get the coverage. And the other one is Apple just is better at it than everyone else. Today we were talking with Will Green. Now, Will's a trainer in applications for Apple. You know, he's a licensed trainer. And I was saying to him, you know, so the integration between between Logic and Final Cut Express and Final Cut Pro and even iMovie, when you're going from the pro apps to the consumer apps and then iMovie through to GarageBand, there's almost like drag and drop between all four of those applications. Tell me one other software developer that does that.
Well, Adobe.
Do they really do drag and drop between those four applications that easily?
I think
they do.
So,
Audition to Photoshop, Photoshop to Flash, Flash to...
I think actually they do. I think through Illustrator and Premiere and their various ecosystems of software, I think I've heard that they work at least as well as Apple's versions.
And between all that, I just spent $2,500.
As opposed to buying a computer at $2,500 and I got the software with it free of charge.
Kind of, yeah.
Sorry,
well,
were
I mean,
talking about,
look
were
at the
you talking
iPad.
About iLife or the pro stuff?
No, I think
the pro stuff.
What Kyle's saying is that if you wanted to talk about the functionality of GarageBand, come iWeb, come, you know, the iMovie stuff, that's the free stuff they give away, you're talking about expending a significant amount of money with Adobe for even that level of quality. And they haven't actually got that. In terms of the music interface, Kyle, you're saying they don't make a GarageBand. They don't make an iMovie, per se.
They just make one hell of a good recording software. I mean, yeah, I like Audition. I use Audition. But at the same time, you don't, you know, it's not, you can't play with it. You just got to know what you're doing with it. With this, you can actually do something with it and play with it at the same time, as your total proof of there, Ewan.
I just want to mention real quick, I found an article on Apple's support website saying that songs created in GarageBand for iPad cannot be opened in GarageBand for Mac. Projects created in GarageBand for Mac cannot be opened in GarageBand for iPad.
Right.
But it does note that a future update of GarageBand for Mac will open songs created in GarageBand for iPad. So it's a yes and no. You can't do it now, but at some point we will be able to put projects from iPad onto your Mac. That's
iPad 3.
How disappointing iPad. And reassuring.
In the same way.
Yeah, actually, yeah. And only Apple can do that for us.
This is just like it's like the condemned man getting a reprieve there, isn't it? Are you going to be able to do this? Well, no. Oh, but it's coming. No. So what you're saying, Kyle, is that it's put creativity in the hands of the uncreative. Thanks for the compliment, mate.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying. Oh, screw it. Yeah, I'm saying that.
prepare to be overwhelmed by crap.
Good crap.
Crap that sounds really good.
Why? I mean, the original discussion that we're talking about here is applications centered internet and functionality experience within the computer, harmful or positive?
Ah, yes. Oh, so can I give you my positive. Quick pitch or my quick rundown of that topic?
Prosecution says. Go ahead, Eric.
Okay. So the thing that I brought up. Now, you had started to say, how do we feel about the apps like GarageBand? Well, first of all, I think that's fantastic. I think we are years and years off from being able to have from being able for web applications that live in the cloud to match GarageBand for iPad's function in any way. Hardware acceleration, storage, real-time response. So I would say something like that, a high-end performance-driven product will be locked up as traditionally installed and locally run software specific to the OS for a few years out.
A high-end piece of software, which is £2.99. $5.
Well, I think they're swallowing a lot of that cost, actually. But the issue that I raised yesterday and was talking about and now have posted and already have been commenting, writing people back, have been giving me their thoughts on YouTube, has been that I think the appification of the web, the taking websites like Yelp, YouTube, Google, Twitter, Pandora, I mean, just anything you can think of, and turning them into these little downloadable dot apps that have to be written once specifically for each operating system, not just once. I mean, you have to go over and over with version 4.0.5.6, and you download 20 different versions every day. Mm. You connect up your device, and you've got 12 updates, you know, every half hour, it seems, just to access the web. And that, to me, seems the question I brought up was why? Why is that a good thing? Why is it? Because the consumer culture about that seems excited. It seems like the companies want us to be excited and thrilled about that, that we can download these little apps like candy, and that they offer an enhanced experience compared to going through their mobile device's web browser. But so my question is why? And the worst case scenario that I proposed is that it's a quiet conspiracy of the device and operating system manufacturers not to allow the web applications as the full functionality and hardware abstraction and hardware tie-ins to the devices as native software, simply so that their identical 4.3-inch gigahertz, A8, half giga RAM, you know, every piece of hardware, all these phones, the hardware is identical. The only thing separating them is the OS, the selection of apps, and then once you've bought apps, the lock-in.
I think that's the thing that I mentioned when we were talking about coming to the end of my iPhone 3G contract. I was sitting thinking, well, do I wait for iPhone 4 or do I go for an Android phone? And I, looking at it, I got this real instant kind of parallel in my mind of I sit and use Canon all the time for work. And the reason I don't go over to Nikon is because I've got £20,000 worth of lenses. There's no way I'm going to go to Canon. And then I looked at what, there was an application that you can download that tells you how many applications you've bought. And it's a scary application because you sit and look at it and you think, I haven't spent £300 on applications. Yeah. And you look down the list and you look down at all the titles and you're like, God, I've bought that. And before you know it, you think, I've spent £300 on applications. Am I going to walk away from that right now? Because right there is my £20,000 in lenses as a parallel. If you've got the iPhone 4, if you've got the Apple iPad, and you're going to think about jumping ship and going to an Android tablet, you're walking away from several hundred dollars or pounds worth of applications straight away. And that's a bad thing.
And not only that, but to use your camera analogy, Apple has managed to lock in their own brand, so to speak, of memory cards, or you could also say 35mm film.
Yeah.
It used to be made by any manufacturer, and they were all equal, competing only on price and speed. And now they've managed to convince us that we need one per manufacturer's product line.
I think what we've got here is, I mean, free to comment on anything I say here, but I'm just talking about the fact that the Mac was a community. And I think until iOS 4.0 came out, it genuinely was a community. Now we've got this app drive, if you like. What we're actually getting towards is ghettoization. You're getting the Apple ghetto, the webOS ghetto, the Android ghetto. And what you've got is you've got to live in that ghetto, and you can't transfer between the others. You can't swap across because there's gang warfare between Android, Apple, and webOS. Your walled garden is becoming a ghetto.
Yeah, it's like the battle with PC with Windows versus OS X versus Linux, whatever. Either way, you're in the same sort of walled garden, really, aren't you?
It's the Jets versus the Sharks.
So let me ask you, for example, let me use Yelp as an example, because that's one that it's one of the most popular downloaded apps for iOS, and it's one that Steve Jobs has even demonstrated on stage that he loves, and it's in their commercials and everything. So Yelp, obviously, Yelp started out as a website. Most of their hits are from PC and Mac web browsers going to Yelp.com and not through mobile devices. Why is it in the interest of a company like Yelp, who makes a successful website, to write an individual application for every single type of mobile device instead of making some kind of web-based, cloud-based app version of their website that, in theory, ran just as well on every device?
Mm. Yeah, it reminds me. I agree with you, Eric. I don't think there, you know, it seems like a backward step. I think I remember the days when we were at MS-DOS 2.11, and there were so many different flavors of it. and vendors used to develop version for this machine, that machine, blah blah blah, and so on and so forth. It is a backward step.
Exactly. And what was the great equalizer of the 90s? The World Wide Web. Everything Indeed. Went to the web. Then it didn't matter if you were on Windows, Linux, Mac. Everyone was just web and email. The same protocols, the same platforms. Everything you did looked exactly the same, no matter what browser you used. Yeah. And we've moved away from that to the point where we've got to have a different, we have to update, install, and purchase websites. That seems backwards to me.
There's a couple of people in the chat room are saying, I quite like the walled garden. Me too. That's why I use Apple. That's why I use Apple, because of the walled garden. You get in the walled garden compared to the openness of Android. I've got an HTC Desire. Doesn't like the openness. Wants to go for the walled garden. Wants to go for the safety and security of it.
Oh, okay.
But the community's
stability,
lost.
Stability.
Yeah, I mean...
Stability.
You look at Android capping 21 applications in one go because of malware complaints. I know there's been the odd bit of malware that's come through in the App Store, but it's minimalistic in comparison because of that prerequisite of passing. The bar is raised, the filtration is there in the process before it gets through to the use. At that point then, are we just preying on people's vulnerabilities in order to sell them the Mac application store, as opposed to just saying, look, you know, there's a community out there. If you look at the website and the website doesn't look right, or if you look at the website and it's not a developer that's got a lot of reviews and that kind of stuff, you just don't download it. You know, the Mac community a year ago was a community, whereas now it's not. Because the developers
got the price of entry.
Exactly, because the developers are developing for the App Store. They're not developing for a website and free sale.
But I think the thing is with that, Ewan, is... If you're a software vendor or whatever, the ideal platform to develop for is the web, as Eric was saying, because you only have to do it once. It's easier to maintain. You're not maintaining multiple versions. So why on earth would, from a software vendor point of view, would you want to take this backward step?
Because they're idiots.
Exactly. Funny. Exactly, Sarah. What happened to write once, run anywhere? What happened to the network as the platform?
Money, commercialism,
money.
That's it.
Apple particularly have seen this opportunity of hanging on to people in terms of consumers and therefore their revenue. I'm not saying it's necessarily a bad thing, but from their point of view, that's exactly what they're doing.
Go back to
I'm not saying they're alone in that. You know, HP are probably going to do that with WebOS and so on and so forth.
So have we decided then as a group that is why we have the app culture that we have today? It's so that someone like Apple can say, well, we could make our operating system just as friendly to websites that want to break out of the confines of the Safari window and look and feel like a native app, even though it's running in the cloud with maybe a little bit of local cache. But instead, we want people to download and constantly engage with this app store, and even if the device is well, and if the app costs money, we'll take a 30% cut. And even if it's not, it looks like something special, cool, and new that people do that lock them in, at least psychologically, if not with their wallet, to our future iOS devices.
It's the American way, though, isn't it? Go back to the 30s. No, it is. Go back to the 30s.
It is.
League Baseball. You would get baseball people who would be fantastically popular and kids would run up to them and they'd sign their baseball caps and all that kind of thing. And then someone came out with the idea of sticking baseball cards in cigarette packets. And you'd take the baseball card and you collect the baseball card. And then you would go and get the baseball player to sign the baseball card. And then someone else thought of a different baseball card. And then that second baseball card went and got that guy and said, listen, I only want you to sign baseball cards made by me, not by the other guy. So then the little kid would turn up and say, could you sign my baseball card, mister? And he'd go, no, I'm not allowed to sign those. I've got to sign the other ones because they give me more money. It's the same thing. It's no different. There is no change in the parallel there. America's process is always about creation of closed market and holding people in as much as you possibly can. Howard Hughes bought the Constellation as an aircraft. He bought the Constellation on the basis he was the only person that could have it for 18 months. Steve Jobs sells the iPhone. He only sells it to AT&T, and AT&T pay a premium on the basis that they're the only people that can have it for the next 5 years.
It's an exclusivity deal, yeah.
That's the American way.
There is another whole side to this, which just occurred to me. The other part in any mobile contract type thing is the airtime provider. Now, if you think about it, if we were to stop all this apps way of doing things and go back to the web, that would mean that you're going to use more bandwidth, which would ultimately make more money for the airtime provider. So where's not their influence in all this?
Well, not necessarily. That is a good point, Sarah, but not necessarily, because I was kind of posing a hypothetical of if these operating systems were written to take better advantage of local cache of websites. The example in my mind, if you guys happen to see the story this week that the program Readability, who removed itself from the Apple App Store because it objected to Apple's 30% cut of in-app purchases, made themselves entirely web-based, and in doing so, took advantage of some kind of HTML5 local caching service, which in theory, I would think, there's no technical reason that they couldn't expand that, and such a thing would benefit the user, but hurt the folks like Apple who want to lock you into various levels of lock-in.
Comment in the chat room saying it's all the App Store makes it more convenient for the end user. And I've just tweeted back saying that is not. It makes it easier for the vendor. By far, it makes it easier for the vendor.
Does it even do that? That's my source of confusion. It seems to me that the easiest way to get to Yelp is go to Yelp.com. If you know the brand name, you go to the brand name.com or you Google the brand name. If by the time you have to venture into an application called iTunes or App Store and search for it, and by the time Yelp or whoever has to write an application, hire developers to write an app and maintain and update an app across various iOS 4.2, 5.0, 6.0 versions, whom does that help?
No, I'm agreeing with you here, because the point that was raised in the chat room was the App Store makes it more convenient for the end user. It doesn't, because there's two more boats to row out in to get to the island to go and buy the application to bring it back. Whereas before, I would go... I mean, you look at one of my favorite apps at the moment is Alfred. I am absolutely hooked on Alfred. I cannot get away from it. It's a replacement for Spotlight tenfold. I can get that from the App Store, or I can go to the website and get it down. Either way, I've got to go somewhere and I've got to get it. But going through the App Store, I've got a password and I've got to wait for it to come down. And whereas I go to alfredapp.com and I've got to get Alfred, click, do you want to get it? Yes, download. You sure you want to download it? Bang, it's there.
If the argument is Mac App Store versus traditional Mac shareware, that's a different thing altogether.
Well, this is a community, isn't it?
I'm sorry?
Isn't the whole principle of the Mac element that it was a community? Mac has always been about the community. Mac's never been about the individual.
Well, don't confuse the... that's a whole different discussion, I think. I would say don't confuse the storification of apps with the appification of the web. And that's... the appification of the web is all that I was thinking about.
Well, if you look at Apple is sitting there looking at all this community, making all of this free stuff, going, we want a piece of this. And all they care about is getting their 30% on the top. If we can get you to sell it through the App Store for even a dollar when you normally give it away free, the developers are looking at it going, ooh, 70 cents. And Apple are looking at it going, ooh, 30 cents. They don't care. They just want that.
Yeah, let me ask you this, Ewan. I'm intrigued why you say that you were saying a few minutes ago that doing that was the American way. Could you enlighten me a little bit? Because I don't have a frame of reference to tell me how it's done differently over in the UK, for example.
Oh, Sarah, feel free to chime in anything on that, because I'm not sure I understood myself there.
Yeah, I was just trying to think about that.
But we don't tend to be. I mean, we've had the Monopolies and Mergers Commission around here in the UK for over 40 years. And the Monopolies and Mergers Commission is very much like the FCC is, in terms of it's for the benefit of the user. And they look at when people have got a monopoly over a situation, or where they're so big that they extort the position to improve their own position and screw everyone else over. Now, if you look at the American way, as I say, if you go back to the 20s and 30s, it's always been to create this exclusivity, to create this I am yours and you're mine and you can't go to them because you're mine. Britain's never created a business like that. And if you look at the way that America does its marketing, America markets things based on how bad the opposition is rather than telling how good their own product is. And I think that's where Apple actually has got the because they've moved away from the Mac versus PC thing. We all laughed at those, but actually they weren't good advertising because they were always about Mac is better than PC and PC is bad for these reasons. But all the time they're saying PCs are getting sales from that because people like John Hodgman. You know, they like the character that goes along with it. You never actually get pure success from that.
I'm wondering what.
In the UK way is to stand up and say what's right about what you do, and you don't slag off the opposition. There's a gentlemanly detachment. Is that the word?
I think I learned at some point that there in some kind of advertising course I took in college or something, that there actually are laws in the UK that you can't slam a competitor. You can't do a direct comparison in a commercial. Do you still have that rule?
Well, you've got rights of defamation. So, I mean, you can't say something that's incorrect anyway, because you've got advertising standards that apply to that, but also you've got the law of defamation. Now, the law of defamation applies in the US, but it's a lot more difficult as the way I understand the US legal system.
Because I remember the example was like the old Prego and Ragu tomato sauce ads from like the 80s, and it would hold the show, the two split screen side by side with the two brand names. But I was told that in the UK that wouldn't be allowed. They'd have to say the other leading brand instead of using the actual name. Do you still have that?
Well, you would be allowed to, but you'd have to be careful what you said, because if you couldn't stand by it afterwards and prove that what you said was correct, you'd get your backside slewed. Definitely.
Okay. I'm curious. So maybe it sounds like the UK culture is a gentlemanly agreement not to lock you into something via your contracts, for instance.
Well, you do get locked into two-year contracts. You absolutely do. But that's come across from the pond. I mean, that's definitely come across from the US. We started off at 12-month contracts and now we're up to 24 because you guys did 24. Everyone over here was quite happy with 12-month contracts prior to that.
Do you have contracts for your cable TV and internet service? Because that's the new big thing now, is everything is 2 years.
No, we're 12 months at the minute. But it'll
even
come.
So, I remember, I don't think it used to be that way back in the early, you know, even like 10 years ago. I don't think contracts were the way that telecommunications were sold to the home.
I mean, Diddle down in the chat room saying straight away, you know, Steve Jobs stands up last week and says iPad 2 is better than everyone else because they can't do it for less than $799, and here we are doing it for $499, and we've still got more memory and storage than they have. You know, the whole of the, and that's the way I think Apple departed a little bit last week, because Steve Jobs came out and wanted to say how bad everyone else was rather than just standing there and saying,
actually that's been different from his normal style.
Exactly. And it's kind of, and I think that's where Microsoft suffers, because Steve Ballmer comes out and wants to mix it up with the opposition when he's actually got a fairly inferior product, whereas Bill Gates actually kept a very diplomatic silence. And I think the one thing that Microsoft should have done that they didn't do was that when Apple were mixing it up with them, and then Steve Ballmer took over and said, well, you know, it's a PC, you know, proud to be a PC, all that kind of stuff. Under Bill Gates, they'd have just kept quiet. You know, someone says, oh, I can make something look nice. Microsoft had the ability to go, well, yeah, okay, but we run power stations, so, you know, get stuffed. And that was it. Yeah. It was done and dusted.
Yeah. I thought the I'm a PC bit was really bad. It was reactive marketing. It was clearly a response to the I'm a Mac, I'm a PC ads. And even after the Get a Mac ads went away, they still did the I'm a PC and Windows 7 was my idea. Well, you know what? Windows 7 was my idea. It was a good tagline by itself. It didn't need the I'm a PC bit still. So it was a nightmare.
And I would say that actually that the whole sequence of those adverts about I'm a PC was actually a reaction to Bill Gates going fishing instead of taking on the CEO of the opposition. And it was the switch over to Ballmer that caused that change. Sorry, Carl, go ahead.
I was just going to say, though, regardless of what we think about the ads or not, they sold a buttload of Macs doing it. That's why one reason why we're sitting here talking about Apple right now is they sold a buttload of Macs. It got a lot more people thinking about, maybe a max for me.
But in the UK, they tried running those ads with Mitchell and Webb, and they went down like an absolute lead balloon. They hated them. They didn't.
That doesn't surprise me.
Because the British way is to stand up and say what you do well. It's not to just stand up and run down your opponent.
I heard about that. Now, was that... I may be confusing this with the case of what happened in Japan. Because I remember in some country, it was that culturally, they found it incredibly disrespectful of the younger, hipper guy to be making fun of the older, more established guy.
Mitchell and Webb were the same. They were the same age, very much like the Justin Long,
okay,
Hodgman thing. They were the right... They were actually a comedy pairing anyway.
That must have been Japan.
Yeah, it must have been Japan. But it was... When it was aired here, there was three or four of them that were direct copies of the US adverts, and the UK just did not respond to them at all. And it's not the UK thing. You do not slag... You know, if the best thing you can say about your own product is what's wrong with everyone else's, there's something wrong with your own product is the viewpoint.
But how did we... Okay, that makes sense. Have we got? I think we may have gotten a little bit far off, though, from the locking up of things that used to be free.
This show getting away from the point. You're having a laugh. Never.
That was hours ago, Kyle.
Yeah, I know. I just said GarageBand. Last thing I remember is GarageBand, and then I the thing about it is, I see what you're saying, Ewan. The way I see it is, the UK says you as a consumer, you make the choice.
Yes.
In the US, it's more of, we're going to tell you to make the choice.
That's what I'm saying. The walled garden is about creating this idea, the fact that we're going to have everything close to us, and you're going to have to come to us if you want it, but you can't go anywhere else after you come to us. Mm-hmm. It's always been about creation of the separation from the rest of the market, whereas the UK is quite happy to enter into universal connectivity. It's quite happy to enter into... a universal coding and language and say, right, everybody have at it, see how you go. We'll make it in version one, you'll make it in version one, and if people like it, they'll buy it, and if they won't, they won't.
What I'd like to see is for a developer to come down with both an iOS and an Android app, and when you buy one, you've bought both of them. So if I bought an app for my phone, I could still download it onto my iPad and have access to both. I think that'd be a really nice thing to do for the consumers, and obviously maybe charge an extra dollar or two because, you know, you're getting both apps for maybe the price of one. I think that there'd be a real market for that.
I agree, but it's never going to happen. Never, ever. Ever.
I agree with you on principle in terms of it being a pro-consumer thing, but think about it. Who would have to write two versions of those apps? The small-time developer. That's who has to put in that cost.
They're already doing it.
Who's the person requiring to? But you're saying to sell it. You're saying to sell two apps for the price of one. But they required them the development time of two apps.
My point is
the only reason that they have to develop two apps to begin with is because those two operating systems have said, we're not going to allow this stuff to play well together. We're not going to allow it. We're not going to allow web apps to be transparent and run the same OS to OS. We're going to require you to invest time and resources in making a version that runs better per operating system.
Now, let's take an exact example of that. If you're a consumer, do you want to buy into Rovio for Angry Birds, or do you want to buy into Apple, or do you want to buy into Apple versus Android versus WebOS? What's the best for the consumer?
I want it easy.
The consumer wants that application on whatever platform they've got in their hand.
The consumer wants to buy into Rovio.
Yeah.
The consumer doesn't want to buy into Apple. It doesn't want to buy into Android, and it doesn't want to buy into WebOS. It wants to buy into Rovio.
Does the consumer even know Rovio? We just know Angry Birds.
All right, the consumer wants to buy into Angry Birds. Same thing.
Right.
Right.
Now, what does Rovio want to do?
Rovio wants the consumer to buy into Angry Birds / Rovio. But the problem is, the billboard for Rovio is Apple, is Android, is WebOS. That's the problem.
They're middlemen. No one likes a middleman.
It's like,
you know, right. So I mean, I thought at first you were saying that you disagreed with what I said, but it sounds like we are both agreeing
yeah.
that that Write Once, Run Anywhere helps developers, helps consumers. Only people it hurts are the middle guys.
No, no. What does the customer want? The customer wants the producer. The producer wants the customer. But unfortunately, they're forced, both of them are forced, to go through the middleman because the middleman is holding the neck of the funnel closed and will not let go. And will not let go at any cost. And that, I'm sorry to say, and I excuse all my colonial friends, is the American way.
Grab on and hold tight.
Tell me I'm wrong.
Yeah. That's the embarrassing thing, is that we can't really tell you you're wrong because you are right, and makes me just want to jump across the pond a bit faster now.
Right, now I'm right. Moving on. No, sorry. Okay, go on.
Well, I was just going to make one point on this.
Go on, Sarah.
I was just going to make one point on this. I know it's slightly at a tangent, but I thought of, I've actually got no definite experience of this, but based on previous experience of maintaining software for multiple platforms, I would imagine that the likes of Rovio or whoever are developing applications for multiple platforms, they've got one code base and they just add libraries to it for each platform. So in terms of maintaining multiple versions, there's probably not a huge amount of development work involved in that.
No.
And yet it's still taking them a long time to roll out various versions of Angry Birds to various platforms.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they've still got to do the QA on it to make sure it works properly.
Well, if we imagined a utopian future similarly to what Adobe or Macromedia imagined in Flash, let's suppose WebGL or some kind of web standard that it combined touch interface with the graphic smoothness, with all that stuff, and made that standardized where if you either run it or you can't, then they could have been on Xbox, Android, iOS, and everything they could possibly wanted to have been on right from the start, and it would have put the power in their hands, let them decide if they wanted to charge a few extra bucks per platform.
I agree, but that's where the middlemen, as we put it, are not going to let that happen. I would think Apple would probably be the first one to make it as difficult as possible.
A point from Sean in the chat room. We've had the same situation with games console for years. I've got a version exactly the point. I've got a version of Assassin's Creed for the PS3 and for the Xbox because I've got a PS3 in the lounge. I've got an Xbox in the office. What I want to buy is Assassin's Creed. In fact, actually, you look at the developer's quite happy he's sold to, but he's quite happy selling one probably to me directly, but he's got to go through Xbox, he's got to go through PS3. And actually, what I want to do is when I'm sat in the office, I want to progress myself through levels 1 to 3 and get by it. And what I'd really like to do is when I can sit in the lounge on a comfy sofa, I'd like to get from level 3 to level 6 and then come back to the Xbox and go from level 6 onwards. But that's never going to happen. Never in a million years.
It's called OnLive. Assassin's Creed, ready and waiting.
Well, I mean, in all seriousness, guys, even you could have that if you had a situation where the app talked to a server at wherever the vendor is and stored that information for you in your profile.
Does OnLive really do that though?
It actually does exactly what you were saying, but I was merely joking because that is merely another platform they have to develop for.
I can say it's exactly. Not exactly what I'm saying, surely.
Well, I mean, no, you can pause the game on one OnLive console, then go to your PC or Mac running the same OnLive, pull it up, you've got this, you restart from the same game because it's entirely in the cloud.
But I've still got to buy three versions of the software.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Maybe we're just asking Google to come save us all.
I'll tell you who I'm asking.
On. Sorry, Eric, go ahead. You had a point.
I'll tell you who I'm asking is web-based standards. I genuinely want to see a resurgence of the open source, royalty-free, patent unencumbered, open web standards that all these companies who have locked us up in various things have always enjoyed. HTML, TCP/IP, email, all these things are there.
And but I got still into there.
A little I see Sarah's clapping. Thank you. And I think we can do this With Facebook, for example, this is hours worth of discussion, so you don't have to respond to this.
Sorry.
The chat room's erupted as well,
no,
by
I'm
the way,
totally
mate.
With Eric on this.
Yeah, I don't know how it's going to happen, but I think there needs to be a massive nonprofit effort to develop new web standards that for instance makes a social identity. I'll give you one example, and if you don't want to talk about it, you don't have to. Facebook. Someone was arguing with me on YouTube comments that why Facebook has to behave the way it does in order to make a social network profitable. I think that a well-designed open source standards-based social network could function the same way that email does, where the service and protocol itself is free and can be implemented by anyone with a server, even local, even hosting it locally from home, and business models will spring up around the hosting and maintenance of that profile.
It could. You're absolutely right. It could. Will?
Could different. Is a beautiful word.
Could is an entirely different word from will. I mean, you could have net neutrality apart from the House, that the subcommittee from the House of Representatives has decided to take the FCC to task over it this week and say, nah, I don't think so. Who's telling those crusties anything at all about net neutrality? Comcast? Verizon? AT&T?
They've got a vested interest.
All they hear is the person who's saying, I'll give you $20,000 to your next campaign fund. There's the real problem.
Well, maybe we have to pray to some generous billionaires out there who like the people who run archive.org and Wikipedia
and look,
care about the same things that we do.
You sit and look at being saved by Google, unquote. You sub-40-year-olds. When you hit 40, you're going to realize that Google's as bad as the rest, because when Google is pushed against the wall and push comes to shove, Google will be forcing out $500 million here, $500 million there to make sure it maintains its market share and its corporate position. It never changes. Google is not the answer to your problems. There is no answer to your problem that's going to come from the corporate world. What's going to come from anywhere and solve your problems is regulation of the corporate world. And the regulation of the corporate world will come from government, and the corporate world will never let government openly regulate it.
Well, it's called socialism.
It's life. It's capitalism gone mad, and it always has been.
Yeah, it's,
and
yeah,
the alternative is socialism, capitalism. And it doesn't work either. What you need is a dictator. Now, when you got a dictator, the right happens. Edit. There we go.
Do you know what? Until I used to think that Microsoft were.
Wait, we do. Isn't his name Steve Jobs?
No, it is. It's exactly it. The reason that Apple is so freaking successful is because of Steve Jobs. The reason that Microsoft was so successful is because of Bill Gates. Well, you had dictators, you were good. Tell you, Gaddafi's the man. Sorry, Scott, Sarah, were you about to say something?
I was going to say, I used to think that Microsoft were the ones that were driving the standards and Bill Gates was the maverick and, you know, he was going to make it all happen. To me, that bubble burst when they used their Windows leverage to leverage IE. Then for me, the bubble burst. Because that was a complete
like Internet Explorer
abuse of the
6?
Situation. Sorry?
Like Internet Explorer 6? Those are some great standards Microsoft pulled out of their rectum.
I'm talking a long time ago, guys.
Max Est in the chat room is saying, Gaddafi's the man, he's got to be the show title.
if we're talking Steve Jobs as the dictator... We're only really going to know that when he's judged on how many pairs of shoes he has.
And the open source
said the man in the Philippines. Yeah.
And how many?
I bet you
those sweaters he has as well.
I bet you Steve Jobs' password is Imelda.
It's at least Marcos.
It's at least Imelda Marcos. There we go.
But it's Cap funny I, you say M. that though, because I will say this, and it doesn't sound good from being here. So if I'm not on next week, it means I got deported. But it. In some cases, dictatorship does work to an extent, and the Philippines kind of is proof of that. Because when Marcos was in power, there was a buttload of companies here, and there's not that many companies here anymore. Well, they're in China.
The
communism is the way to go.
I think the only thing you can say is that having a dictator makes things happen. You may not like that, some of the things that happen, but it certainly makes things happen.
Dude had a shoe
so
habit
to feed.
So
devolved from app stores to communist dictatorships.
No, no, he wasn't communist, was he?
Hey, it's all made in China now, boys.
Is a dictator is not greedy, not corrupt, but is for the people. Then you could have a shot.
A dictator for the people.
I just seen. Hey, Troy, this is for you. Wisconsin has a dictator.
Pipe down. Blast it.
Isn't Wisconsin the cheese state?
Yes, it is.
Shouldn't they be using more Macs there? Based on our conversation this afternoon about cheese for the Mac.
Well, maybe. I don't get it. You know, the big show's kind of turned into the Big Mac show.
The Big Mac show. There we go.
Yeah.
We weren't going to talk about Mac because we already talked about Mac, but we would never have said anything this... No more cheese talk, says Mac, because he cheese was there this afternoon. Cheese talk, that's the thing. See, Wisconsin's the cheese state, isn't it?
I'm still waiting for the cheese iPad cover.
The cheese iPad cover. I want the cheese. Because Mac suggested that we use Primola, which is like a squeezy cheese, as the binding for the new Mac cheese cover to go on the new iPad 2 with the proximity sensor. So you get like processed cheese and you fold it across the front of your Mac and it works with the proximity sensor, switches it all off. And it's held on by squeezy cheese at the left side.
As I remember this conversation.
Exactly. It was a really good Mac show this afternoon, mate. You've got to listen.
As I remember, it actually started by somebody talking about putting processed cheese through a printer.
That's exactly what it was. So you can put pictures of your kids on the processed cheese.
What?
It all comes back. Yeah, it all comes back.
All will
cheese.
Become evident when I post it. Don't worry.
Now I'm sorry I wasn't up at 5 a.m.
Yeah. No, you weren't. Don't worry. Right. Have we got any cool thingies this show? Because that's been the best big show I think I've ever done. I've loved every minute of that. Troy, have you got a cool thingy for us, dude?
Yeah, Foursquare for Android just released 3.0. And if you're not familiar with Foursquare, it's a geolocation check-in service. You go to, wherever, Pizza Hut, someplace, and pull out your mobile phone, pull up your Foursquare app, say check in here, find out if your friends are also there. You can leave tips for people like, try this, try that. And their new 3.0 update includes recommendations from places that your friends go to, places that you've been to. And it'll say, hey, maybe if you go to a lot of coffee shops, you go to a new city, it'll say, hey, check out these coffee places. And you can see tips from other Foursquare users. So they're really, it's not just about checking in. It's about being involved with your community, trying new things. And I think it's just a lot of fun.
And knowing when I can rob your house, Troy.
Well, you probably shouldn't put your house address on there to begin with, so don't check in at home.
I've seen a few people on Twitter say you check in with Foursquare and it says I'm at home.
Home, yeah.
So, like,
I don't
there's
get
a map,
that.
There's a geolocation there. There's a Google map pops up. There's a reference.
I thought Foursquare was the app that made you the mayor of a certain place when you go there more than anybody else.
Yeah,
it is.
Don't you get the badges with them as well?
Yep.
Yeah.
So now that you've got internet in airlines, is there going to be a Mile High badge?
Maybe.
I've just got the Mile High badge. Just hope your wife's not on there as well. There we go. Any price on that, Troy? Free. Good man. We like free. Sarah, have you got an application for us?
I have indeed, and it's it's also an Android app, something I discovered a couple of weeks ago. And I must admit, when I get hungry, I actually go looking, when I go out for a meal or something, this is what I actually go looking at. So it's an Android app called Food Spotting. And rather than actually sort of do a search for a type of restaurant, it actually works on photographs that people have actually taken of the food. And I must admit, just browsing through it makes me feel hungry. But it's great because it actually has got comments on the food, where the restaurant is, where it was taken, so on and so forth. I must admit, I'm actually, I do look at it sometimes just when I'm feeling hungry to actually decide what I want to have to eat.
Foodspotting.com/Android.
Yeah, that's for the Android app.
Do they do an iPhone one if you've got a / Android?
I don't know, but I would be surprised if they didn't.
There's a food one, definitely, because there was one on Net at Night with Amber a few weeks back that was a foodie one. I'll have to look that up, and I'll put it in the show notes, perhaps, if I can remember it. Kyle, have you got one for us, mate? A cool thingy.
Well, this is as cool as it gets this week, because if you're so sick of Charlie Sheen as much as we all are, then you need this thing. It's the Tinted Sheen Charlie Sheen Browser Blocker. You can use it for Google Chrome or Google Firefox for Firefox.
Not yet.
And not yet. Maybe after this show. And it essentially blocks everything from Charlie Sheen from the web. I have used it. It does work. And I'm very grateful for it.
Very good. Max says that foodspotting.com does have an iPhone app as well as.
Thank you. And it's also a web-based app as well.
Very good.
I'm actually looking at the moment.
Very, very good. And
by the way, mine's free, just so you know.
Thanks, mate. Eric, okay. What have you got for us, mate?
Well, my free thingy relates perfectly to a story we didn't talk about, but I'll mention it quickly. So there was an article that was in our rundown that I had already read on my own this week, talking about scientists saying sleep scientists saying that people are getting less sleep than they should, partly because looking at our computer screens late at night with their very blue daylight tint is screwing up our circadian rhythms to thinking that it's daylight, whereas we should be looking at much, much warmer, or rather more orange colors of, I guess, I don't know if that evolutionarily is just the sunset, or if that also has to do with like candles and firelight and stuff. Mm. So less blue, more orange. I've actually had doctors tell me this, because I've had problems falling asleep a lot, and I've always had doctors say, well, it's because you're looking at that darn computer screen right up till the moment you shut your eyes. So I've always like turned down the brightness and tried various things like that. I've only used this now for about 3 days, so I can't say if I've had good results, but I am impressed with how well the application does its thing. The program is called Flux, spelled F.L-U-X. Website is stereopsis.com/flux, but if you just Google F.L-U-X, it's free. It's for every platform, every version of Windows, Mac, and even Linux. What it does is, it based on your geolocation on the face of the Earth, it knows when sunset occurs. And at that time, it slowly starts to dim your computer screen from its native bluish color. Daylight screens are naturally daylight balanced, down to any level of orange that you choose, tungsten, fluorescent, and so forth, various types of, you know, incandescent, various degrees of orangeness. I expected to see some kind of performance hit or glitches or doing weird things. So far, it works great on two different Macs I've tried. And I can't wait to see. And I've noticed just by comparison that, like, if I'm reading or even like watching something late at night on the computer, I'll then switch it over to, you know, I'll click the button to disable it. And I'm like, oh my God, that's blue. So your eyes really do adjust to it. And maybe it does actually help make you fall asleep and not think that it's the middle of the day when it's actually midnight.
So this is something that's running in the background on your computer constantly.
Yeah.
How does it fit with the antivirus that you've got running at the same time?
Ah, I knew you were going to say that. I knew it.
Did you install Sophos antivirus?
I did not. Oh, no, I did. I ran it on my old computer. I ran it. It found nothing.
But did it hog? Did it slow down? Did it?
Well, I have no objective way of measuring that.
Okay, right. You carry on, mate. You carry on. We've had 80 people download the Mac antivirus software that Sophos do free of charge, and we've had no one who said that they've had a hit on performance at all. So it looks like it's well worth it. There's a link on the website. There will be a link on the website. There is a link on the website. There will be a link on the website for the Sophos stuff, and you can go there and get it. But it's free of charge. If you've got a Mac, go and get it and just use it, because it doesn't do a damn thing wrong, and it's just perfect. So there we go.
I just installed Flux here on the Mac, and now I can't see you guys anymore.
Yeah, because it's the middle of the night there. That may be a good thing.
Yeah, sorry. That's maybe why.
My pick of the week is Amazon's ordering system. Because the wife said to me, you know that film Leap Year? Would you go and buy it for me on Amazon? I said, yeah, no worries. Not a problem. So we went and bought it, and it's a girl film, isn't it? Have you seen it? It's the one with what's her name that was in Museum 2. Night at the Museum 2. Can't remember her name. Amy someone or other? Amy Adams? Amy Stewart? No, she had a different song. Anyway.
Winehouse?
Amy someone. Anyway, it's Sharon watched it. It was a bit schmaltzy, and it was a bit girly, and I thought, well, okay, she wants it, she can have it. So I ordered it. Leap Year, please, from Amazon. Thank you very much. What they sent me was Leap Year. This is Leap Year, and it apparently stands in comparison with Last Tango in Paris. Now, that's not the film I fell asleep in front of. I'm pretty sure of it. And one of the reviews from Total Film says it's tense and explicit, and it's got an 18 certificate. So my pick of the week is Amazon, because they've sent me a far better film than bloody Leap Year would be. Because that was a boring piece of crap and I fell asleep halfway through it. So I'm looking forward to this.
Is that a new feature of Prime?
Thank you, Amazon, for sending me through an explicit and tense film in approaching the boring, turgid crap that I didn't watch. I really appreciate you for that.
Are you saying, Ewan, that actually you were browsing the adult section on Amazon?
No, I put in Leap Year. Leap Year came up. I clicked on the picture of Amy What's-Her-Face, and I got this. And the thing is, normally, with customer services, you'd be really unhappy, wouldn't you? But I'm not.
Just your wife
part
is.
Of
so soon you will be.
She's pissed beyond belief. But there we go.
It's part of Amazon's new Happy Mistake trial program.
Exactly. Jeff, whatever you're doing, don't change it, dude. There we go.
As long as the films are X-rated, don't change it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I got to say, if you've seen Leap Year, you'll know damn well that what I'm talking about is the truth there. It is really just not worth watching. Don't buy it.
I'll watch it next year.
Last word goes to our sponsors, UK2.net. They are a bandwidth and hosting provider for the Bagel Tech Network. Every show goes through them, regardless of what it is. They do e-commerce, they do web domains, they do all sorts of stuff to do with the web, and they're an absolutely fantastic company because, if you're listening to us, it's because of them. They support us, they give us the bandwidth, they give us the servers, they give us the domain names, they give us absolutely everything we've got, and we just would not exist without them being here. So please go to bageltechnews.com, and when you get there, click on uk2.net, and they'll know that we've sent you to them. Whether you buy anything or not, it doesn't matter. That's not the issue. They just want to support us, and we would like you to support them, because without them, there wouldn't be a show. Simple as that. uk2.net are the be-all and end-all. Last month, we did nearly a terabyte of data. We were just shy of a terabyte of data. This month, after 10 days, we've already done 700 megabytes, so I think we're going to cruise past that with some room to spare. And what have UK2 said to us? Not, oh, do you mind? You're doing a bit too much here, guys. Steady on. You know, that's not what we signed up for. They're just, okay, no worries.
Don't you mean 700 gigabytes, not megabytes?
No, well, megabytes, we're not that popular. So.
Okay.
I was right.
Just making sure.
1 terabyte down to 700 megabytes is not a big jump, is it? No.
No, that's the App Store.
It's gigabytes. It's gigabytes. There we go. Sorry, I do apologize. Don't detract that from the fact that UK2 are fabulous, please. Please go and click on them. Please support them, because they support us. We need them. Thank you very much. Right, last run around. Where can we get a hold of you, everybody? Troy?
You can find me at my website, thetroyking.com, and also on Twitter at thetroyking.
When did you get thetroyking.com and break away?
It's always been thetroyking.com.
Really? You've only just recently announced this.
Uh-huh. I've been doing it for a couple of weeks now, at least.
Oh, 2 weeks. That's like my wife. She goes and buys a set of new shoes, and I say, new shoes? She says, no, I've had these ages.
It's part of the psyche, Ewan.
It is. Troy King's breaking away. You do the Droid Show as well for us, don't you? And the Rage Show, the Angriest Man in Tech.
Yep, Bagel Tech Rage and Bagel Tech Droid, both on Fridays. And there's links from thetroyking.com. That's why I'm doing the website, so people can find everything.
I wasn't upset, mate. I was just having a go. It's all right.
And he plays Vegas on Sundays.
Woo! Thanks, mate. Sarah, where can we get a hold of you?
Sorry.
Troy King has left the building.
I think I was thinking my website should be the Sarah Jane, but it's not. It's sarahjaneuk.com or on Twitter at sarahjaneuk.
Jolly good. Thank you. Comment in the chat room, just as long as you didn't order Toy Story, because apparently that's a different film that you don't want to show to your child. Thanks, Dan. Kyle, where can we get a hold of you, mate?
Twitter.com/KyleSwagger, Swagger with 1G. Let's keep it simple.
And after this week, are you breaking away as well?
I don't think so. Next week, not this week.
Next week. And finally, yeah. Eric Lanigan. Maestro.
Eric Lanigan with a .com after it. ERIKLANIGAN, Twitter.com/EricLanigan. Again, it's ERIK. There's no C anywhere in there. And if you could please everybody, I'm going to commandeer your audience right now and say, hey, look at me. I posted a video. The latest Tech Talkback has an interesting long beginning, though. And an interesting thing with Leo Laporte comes on at the end. The middle, I'm not going to lie, the calls were a little bit boring. they weren't the top-notch calls.
I'll tell the listeners you said that.
What?
I'll tell the listeners you said that.
but the beginning and end were quite good. And I really... The stuff that you and I, meaning all three of you, four of you talked about today, I want to keep going elsewhere also, because I think it's an interesting topic. A little bit of the application, yeah. A little bit of some other stuff we haven't gotten to. It's stuff I haven't heard people discuss, and I want to get more and more people's opinions on that. So please listen and either agree, hate, or say meh.
Okay, we will. I did watch nah. The interview with Leo, it's about half an hour, isn't it? And it's there's a lot of stuff talked about. It's quite interesting. Very good. Very good.
Great, well, thanks.
The introduction.
Check it out.
Not so much.
That's what that little thing at the bottom of YouTube's for. You can kind of move it.
Yeah.
Move it. There you go.
People do that all the time with our show. Thanks for joining us. Please come back again next week. If you don't, I'll understand.